بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Yesterday we had come to the stage where we explained in regards to ghibat that there are certain prescriptions that the mashayikh have prescribed, that if a person wants to get rid of the disease, then what a person should do. And at the same time we mentioned there are certain occasions where it becomes permissible also for a person to make ghibat. Amongst those occasions where it's permissible for a person to make ghibat, the first is when a guna is committed openly in public. That in front of everyone a person is committing a guna. So here it's not hidden. So if a person speaks about it, that won't be considered as ghibat. But that doesn't give a person license now. That we see somebody doing something wrong openly in public, that we start speaking about it. The hadith of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, we are taught, مِنْ حُسْنِ إِسْلَامِ الْمَرْءِ تَرْكُهُ مَا لَا يَعْنِي. That from the beauty of Islam, that a person does not get involved in those things that are not of concern to him. So if we see somebody doing wrong, make dua for that person rather than speaking about that. So that's the first occasion. The second occasion where it's permissible for a person to make ghibat is where you will protect somebody from some harm, from some difficulty, then it becomes permissible to talk about it. For an example, someone is planning a robbery. So you inform the police that these people, this group of people, they are planning a robbery. So that won't be considered as ghibat. You are protecting somebody from harm. Or somebody proposes for a girl and you know the boy. So they come to you for reference. They want to know that how is this boy. So you know that he's got some habits in him that are not too good. So you tell them that, you know what, think carefully before you make a decision, there are certain issues. So this won't be considered as ghibat as well. On one occasion, Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, he was sitting with Hazrat Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha, and one person was coming. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said, بِئْسَ أَخُ الْأَشِيرَةِ, that this is an evil man of his tribe. So after a little while, he came closer to Nabi alayhi salam. So Nabi alayhi salam stood up, he welcomed this person, he entertained him, he hosted him, and then this person departed. So Aisha radiallahu ta'ala said, Ya Rasulullah, you just said he's an evil person of his tribe. But when he came, then you were so hospitable to this person, so kind to this person. So how come this difference? So Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, O Aisha, did you ever see me meet somebody with evil character? But the reason that I told you about this person is so that you and your friends, you are all protected from the harm of this person. That is the reason I inform you that he's an evil person of his tribe. In the field of ahadith, Allah Ta'ala reward the muhaddithin. Such great work the muhaddithin have done to preserve ahadith, to protect those ahadith that are authentic. They sifted out those narrations that are authentic and those narrations that are not authentic. The muhaddith will write that this narration reached me from so and so, and he heard from so and so, and he heard from so and so. And in this way he will record the chain of all the narrators going up right to Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And then at the end they will remark that perhaps this narrator is not a reliable narrator. He is unreliable. So therefore, according to me, this is the status of this hadith. It is a reliable narration, it is an unreliable narration. So he will comment on that narration. So these are the ulama of Ta'dil and Jarah. They will say which is a reliable narration, which is an unreliable narration. There are approximately 100,000 narrators. And this field or this subject is known as Asma'ur Rijal, where the name of every narrator has been recorded and the history of every person is recorded. For these 200,000 narrators plus minus, there are 200 kitabs. And the imam of this field is Yahya bin Ma'in rahmatullahi alayhi. So it is mentioned that these muhaddithin, when they would do research on a particular narrator, they will have to go into the villages. And after going into the villages, they will then scrutinize and check that narrator. That what is the condition of his salah? Is he performing his 5-time salah? What is the character of the person? Does he speak lies? How is the memory of this person? And they will then consult with certain people in the villages to do a little more inquiry. They tell us about this person. So those people from the village would sometimes question these muhaddithin at the end. And what they will ask, that as he sent the proposals, you're doing so much of inquiry, you are finding out so much. Has this man sent a proposal for your daughter that you are asking so much? So if you have to look at this outwardly, it seems like it's ghibat been made. That you are inquiring about somebody, you have been informed about the faults of somebody, but it does not fall in the category of ghibat. Why? Because it is done for the preservation of ahadith. That those ahadith that are authentic, they are sifted out from those narrations that are unauthentic. And they went to such an extent that sometimes it did not matter to these muhaddithin whether it was their parents that were involved or whether it was their children that were involved. Ali ibn Madini rahmatullahi alayhi is the ustad of Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi alayhi. So somebody came to Ali ibn Madini rahmatullahi alayhi, and they asked him that your father also narrates ahadith. So what is the status of your father's narration? So Ali ibn Madini rahmatullahi alayhi, he said that ask somebody else, because that was his father. He had to show respect to his father. So he said, go and ask somebody else. So they said, no, we don't want the opinion of somebody else. We want your opinion in this matter. So Ali ibn Madini rahmatullahi alayhi said, don't take my father's narration. Imam Abu Dawud rahmatullahi alayhi, when they came to him, they said, what is the status of the narrations of your son? So Imam Abu Dawud rahmatullahi alayhi said, they don't accept the narrations of my son. So even if it was a family member, then also they would outwardly, they would speak out openly that accept or don't accept the narration of this family member of mine. So here also, it won't be considered as ghibat, because it's for the protection of the ahadith of Nabiya Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So this is the second occasion where ghibat becomes permissible, where the principle is that you're protecting somebody from harm, then it will become permissible for a person to inform the next man of that harm. And the third occasion where it becomes permissible to make ghibat, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala mentioned in the Quran, لَا يُحِبُّ اللَّهُ الْجَهْرَ بِالسُّوءِ مِنَ الْقَوْلِ إِلَّا مَنْ ظُلِمْ. That Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala does not love that evil is spoken about openly, except that person that has been oppressed, that zulm has been made on somebody, the right of somebody has been snatched away, has been usurped. So that person wants justice. So for example, he goes up to the police, or he goes up to the qazi, he goes up to the court, to the judge, so that he can retrieve his rights. So this won't be considered as ghibat. But today we're living in such a time that perhaps if that matter is taken to the police, the criminals have so much of contact, you get into trouble. So what happens in that situation? So here the ulama have mentioned that a person, he goes up to his sheikh and he's got that steam now, it's all boiling on his chest. So if it remains there, that person, he'll get sick also. So he has to take it out. So if he goes to his sheikh and he speaks to his sheikh, or maybe there's some alim in the community, or somebody that he has confidence, he has trust on, so he goes up to that person and informs him. And that person then listens to him. So this also won't be considered as ghibat, but on condition that a person, he does not put in his masala, that little extra he mustn't put in. What is the reality? Then just speak what is the reality and get it off your chest. So that also won't be considered as ghibat. So these are basically just three basic occasions where it is permissible for a person to make ghibat. And these things are impermissible because Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has given so much of honor, so much of respect to the human being. When that insan, when he leaves this world also, when he passes away, there is so much of respect that mayyat is given the ghusl. With so much of respect he is carried to the qabristan. With so much of respect he is put into the qabr. At every instance of his life, there is so much of respect given to the human being. His nails are cut, they are not just thrown away in the garbage bin, but that is buried also. So much of respect is given to the human being, and then another human being comes and he attacks the honor of a mu'min. So that is something that is unacceptable in Shariat. Sometimes this ghibat does not take place verbally. Ghibat doesn't always take place verbally. But sometimes ghibat takes place through a'mal as well, through our amal, through our action as well. On one occasion, Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was talking to Hazrat Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha. So while speaking to Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha, she spoke about a particular woman. And Hazrat Aisha radiallahu ta'ala indicated that this woman is a short woman. So with her hand she tried to indicate that she's a short woman. So Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, in this indication of yours, he says, He says, the result and the consequence was this, that the malaika had run away. That here you are trying to indicate that she's a short woman. In this way you have made ghibat about this woman. And if you intended to humiliate the person by saying this is a shorty or this person is a fat person, so you try to humiliate a person. So he said, in this is another guna. And that is, you are trying to humiliate, you are making mockery of a person. So sometimes ghibat is done through actions as well. Sometimes ghibat is done as a well-wisher. A person is wishing well for somebody. For example, a person, just an example for us to understand, a person was caught out for fraud, for example. Now he's put into prison and he has to appear in court. So now what a person says, he says, you know what, I feel sorry for the father. The father is such a good man, such a wonderful person. The family, there's ulama in that family, such a good family. And I don't know what's wrong with this person. Now he's putting them through so much of humiliation, so much of disgrace. So this is, not as a well-wisher, but as a sympathetic person. So here what he is indicating, what he is saying, that he is feeling sorry for them. He is feeling sorry for the family. But in reality he is making ghibat. He is involved in haram. Although he is indicating that he is feeling sympathy for the entire family. So this is also one form of ghibat. And sometimes it is as a well-wisher. An example of this is where ghibat is made as a well-wisher. For example, a person, Allah Ta'ala save us, this an example, a person is involved with a woman. So now, a person, he wants to talk about it. So what he says, I told him so many times, that you know what, rather you make nikah. But you can't carry on in guna, you can't carry on in sin. And I even told him that I'll organize the molana, I'll organize the nikah, everything will arrange for you. Just get married. So what is he saying? That I am trying to make a plan, sort everything out for him. But in reality, he's involved in ghibat. So these are the various forms of ghibat. We make dua to Allah tabarak wa ta'ala that Allah tabarak wa ta'ala protects us. A person destroys himself by making ghibat of another mu'min, of another believer. So this is one way a person should protect his tongue, which is the advice of Luqman al-Islam, that we are when we with people, and this ghibat takes place when we with other people. So when we with people, then take care, make hifazat of your tongue. Another sin of the tongue, which generally people are so involved in, and they don't even regard as a sin any longer. So one is it's a sin. And the second aspect is many people do not even regard it as a sin. That is the evil of speaking lies. That today speaking a lie is not even considered as a sin by many people. Yet in the hadith, Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is reported to have said, Ayatul Munafiqi Salaf, that there are three signs of a hypocrite. Although ulama have mentioned that there are different categories of hypocrisy also. One is nifaqi i'tiqadi, where the fundamental beliefs of a person are not in order. Outwardly a person exposes himself as a mu'min, as a believer. Why? So that he is protected. He lives like a mu'min. He is protected by the Muslims. And when he passes away, he is buried also like a Muslim. Why? Because outwardly he has recited the kalima. But in his heart, a person has kufr hidden. So regarding these munafiqeen, Allah Ta'ala says, وَإِذَا قَامُوا إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ قَامُوا كُسَالَى. When they come for namaz also, when they stand up, in a very lazily manner they will stand up. يُرَاؤُونَ النَّاسِ وَلَا يَذْكُرُونَ اللَّهَ إِلَّا قَلِيلًا. So that they can be seen by people, but they do not make the zikr of Allah except very, very little. So these munafiqeen, Allah Ta'ala says, إِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ فِي الدَّرْكِ الْأَسْفَلِ مِنَ النَّارِ. That verily these hypocrites, they will be in the lowest depth of the fire of Jahannam. This was very common in the time of Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So this is one category of hypocrisy. And the other category of hypocrisy is where a person is a mu'min, he is a believer. Yet the actions that he carries out, these are not the actions of a mu'min, of a believer. These are the actions of a hypocrite. This is what is termed as nifaq amali. That this is hypocrisy in action of a person. A person, is not very easy to term a person as a kafir. To label somebody as a kafir is a very dangerous matter. To such an extent, fuqaha have written, if there are 99 reasons to label a person as a kafir, and there is one reason to keep him as a mu'min, as a believer, then we will ignore the 99 reasons and we'll act on that one reason. We won't make a person a kafir in a hurry, but we'll keep him as a mu'min, as a believer. So in this hadith, Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam says that there are three signs of a hypocrite. Amongst the three signs, the first sign Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam mentions is ahaddatha kadaba, that when a person he speaks, he tells lies. This is a sign of a person being a hypocrite. In another hadith, Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam mentioned, وَمَنْ كَانَ إِذَا حَدَّثَ صَدَقَ, that a man when he speaks, he tells the truth. وَإِذَا وَعَدَ أَوْفَى, and when he makes a promise, he fulfills that promise. وَإِذَا أَتُمِنَ أَدَّى, and when he is left to somebody's amanat, he fulfills that amanat. فلا تتحرج أن تشهد أنه مؤمن أو كما قال عليه السلام. That don't feel difficult in giving evidence and testimony that this person is a mu'min and is a believer. This lies, it was even detested in the days of Jahiliyyah, in the days of ignorance, and in every Shariat, lies was unacceptable. We know the people of Jahiliyyah, what they were involved in. But lies they couldn't tolerate. The riwayat comes in Bukhari Sharif, that Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, when he wrote letters to the various kings, one of the letters that was written was to Heraclius of Rome. And this letter was sent to Dihya Kalbi radiallahu ta'ala. So Heraclius at that time, he was in Sham. So the Dihya Kalbi radiallahu ta'ala took this letter and he delivered the letter to him. So when he received this letter, he said, I want to make some inquiry about Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So is there anyone that is present in Sham at this stage from Makkah Sharif that I can find out about Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? At that time, Abu Sufyan was present. He was in Sham. But he was not a mu'min. He didn't accept Iman at that time. So he was summoned to the court of Heraclius. When he was brought before Heraclius, he said, I want to ask you a few questions about Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. Among the many questions, some of the questions I'll mention. One question he asked Abu Sufyan, he said, what type of a family does Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam come from? A respectable, honorable family, what kind of a family? So Abu Sufyan, at that time, he said that Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam comes from a very respectable and honorable family. The most respected family in the Arabian Peninsula, that is the family that Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam comes from. He asked him the second question. He said that who are the followers of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? Are they the elite people, the respectable and honorable people, or are they the lower people? And normally in initial stages, the followers of the Nabi of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, they are those that who we will categorize as the lower class people. Nuh alayhi salatu wasalam, his people told him that فَقَالَ الْمَلَأُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِنْ قَوْمِهِ مَا نَرَاكَ إِلَّا بَشَرًا مِثْلًا وَمَا نَرَاكَ اتَّبَعَكَ إِلَّا الَّذِينَ هُمْ أَرَاذِلُنَا بَادِيَ الرَّأْيِ. The people that follow you, we see them to be the low class people. So the initial stages of the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala, those that are the lower class people, they will follow the Nabi of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. And the leaders will come later on. So he said, it is the lower class people that are the followers of Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Then he asked him another question. He said, did you ever go to war with them? And did you win or did he win? So at that time only two battles had taken place. The battle of Badr had taken place and the battle of Uhud had taken place. So he said, yes, we've been to war, sometimes they win, sometimes we win. So Abu Sufyan, being a kafir, he says, at that time, I also desire that let me say something that will adversely affect Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. But he said, I couldn't bring a lie onto my tongue. So only one incident came to the mind of Abu Sufyan at that time. He says, this man claimed that in a portion of the night, he traveled from Makkatul Mukarramah to Baytul Muqaddas, which is 1 month's journey. And then from Baytul Muqaddas, he went up to the seven heavens. And in the same night, he returned to Makkatul Mukarramah. So is this possible? So at that time, there was one alim of Baytul Muqaddas that was sitting next to Heraclius. He says, I know that night. So Heraclius looked at him, said, how do you know that night? So he says that I was in charge of closing the doors of Baytul Muqaddas every night. So he says, on this particular night, I went to close the door. But he says, I could not close the door. So we made arrangement to get it checked, but unfortunately we were unable to close this door. It seemed like there was some pressure on the door, because of which the weight was now on this door, the door refused to move. So he said, let's leave it, we'll see in the morning what happens. So he said, we went away. So when we came in the morning, he says, then we seen that there were some droppings of an animal, which indicated that some Nabi of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala was here last night. So then we realized that this is the reason why the door could not close last night. But Abu Sufyan at that time also, he says, I couldn't speak a lie. Being a kafir, he says, I couldn't speak a lie. Mufti Taqi Usmani Sahab, Zaman Barakatum, he explains, he says, once there was a person that came to visit me in Pakistan. He was from out of Pakistan. And this person, he says, was a dini person, in our circles, what we will say. So he was a dini person. He had ta'alluq with mashayikh also. He was engaged in zikrullah also. So he came to visit me. So he said, in our conversation, I asked him, I said, when you're returning, when you're going back? So this person told Mufti Sahib, he says that I extended my stay by another 8 days. Approximately 8 days I extended my stay. I was already due to return, but I just sent a doctor's certificate. So Mufti Sahib asked him, he said, doctor's certificate? So he said, yes, we sent a doctor's certificate that I won't be able to attend work, I won't be able to come. So then he asked him further, he said, what was written in that doctor's certificate to clarify the matter? So he said, in there it was written that at this stage I'm unfit to travel. That is why I will stay here in Pakistan. I will be remaining behind for another 8 days. So Mufti Sahab asked him, he said, that don't you consider this a lie? You're a pious person. You're a dini person. You don't consider this as a lie that you have brought a false certificate and you have sent a false certificate. So he was honest. A person, one is he acknowledges that I'm wrong. That person, he will progress. So he told Mufti Sahab, he says, up to this day, the thought didn't even come to my mind that this is a lie. So then he asked, he said, what should I do? What was I supposed to do? So Mufti Sahab said, that either you should have returned to work. If they wouldn't give you leave, then you should have returned to work. And if you didn't want to go to work, you wanted the few extra days, then you should have taken unpaid leave. So you shouldn't have taken your salary for these few days. So that would have been better. On another occasion, he says that once he was in Jeddah, and he says, one pious person, he sent a letter with somebody, and he sent it to Mufti Sahab. So this person brought the letter and came. So in the letter it was written, that this person is from India. But at this stage, right now, he wants to go to Pakistan. He's from India, but he wants to go to Pakistan. So he says that we want you, Mufti Sahab, now, to make a request to the Pakistani embassy. To issue a passport, a Pakistani passport, so that he can go to Pakistan. And they said, we have already made the request, but we want you also to intercede on our behalf. So he comments on this. He says that here one side Hajj is taking place. One side Umrah is taking place. We are crying before Baytullah. Tawaf is taking place. But at the same time, these type of acts are taking place and we don't even regard it as a guna. We don't even regard that this is something that is not permissible. On one occasion, Nabi Karim Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam was walking. And there was a woman that was trying to call her little child. So this child was refusing to come to the mother. Many a time the parents call the children, the child doesn't want to come. So what the parents say, come here, I want to give you the sweet, I want to give you something. So this woman also, to get her child, she said that, come here, I want to give you something. So Nabi al-Islam stopped. He said, what do you want to give the child? So this woman had the date, she had khajur. He said, Ya Rasulullah, this is what I want to give the child. I want to give khajur. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, had these dates not been by you, if you didn't really intend to give the child these dates, you just wanted to get the child by you, then one guna would have been written in your book of deeds. From this hadith also we learn that a person in front of children, he should speak the truth. And when a person makes a promise to a child, then fulfill that promise also. Yes, he said that I want to give you something. So that promise that she had made of giving the child something, it should be fulfilled. That khajur should then be handed over to the child. In another hadith, Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam mentioned that woe unto that person, or a painful punishment be to that person that speaks a lie in order to make other people laugh. And how often this happens. Person, he cracks a joke, he wants everyone to laugh. So everyone's happy, everyone's enjoying himself. But for him, he's preparing that azab for him. Why? Because he's speaking a lie. So who will think in today's time that speaking a lie, just as a joke, that is also a guna. But that also is a sin. It doesn't mean that our shariat is a dry shariat. That a person is not permitted to joke, a person is not permitted to have light-hearted conversations. No. Nabi alayhi salam would also have light-hearted conversations. And with Sahaba also. On one occasion, one elderly woman, she came to Nabi Karim sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And she tells Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam that, Ya Rasulullah, make dua that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala enters me into Jannat. So Nabi alayhi sallallahu alayhi wasallam told her, old people don't go to Jannat. So when he said that, this lady, the woman, started crying. That I'm not going to go to Jannat. So then Nabi alayhi sallallahu alayhi wasallam told her that a Jannati, when he's entered into Jannat, he could have passed away when he's 80 years old, 100 years old, whatever age. But a person will be made young again. And when he's young, then he will be entered into Jannat. So see, there was a joke here. There was a light-hearted conversation here. But it was clean. There was no guna, there was no sin that was involved in it. So there were jokes in the life of Nabi Kareem Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam as well. These type of jokes. On one occasion, one Sahabi came to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and he told Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Ya Rasulullah, I require a camel. I want to travel. I want a camel. So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam told him, I'll give you a baby camel. So he said, Ya Rasulullah, I need to make safar. I need to travel. What am I going to do with the baby camel? So Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said that every camel is the baby of his mother. A man is 60 years old. If his mother is living, to her, this is my baby, 60-year-old baby. But he's still my baby. So just like that also, the camel, that this is my baby, irrespective of the age of the camel. So then Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam fulfilled the need of the sahabi. So Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam also, there were occasions that he was light-hearted with sahaba. But there was no lies that was involved. Sometimes this also happens, that a person is going for a job interview. Now we know the man is desperate. So long he didn't have a job. He was unemployed. So he knows us. He knows us in the masjid. He meets us in the masjid. He speaks to us. Perhaps he told us his sad stories also, at what difficulty he's going through. So now he comes up to us and he says, you know what, I need one or two references. So can you please prepare something for me? That give a reference letter, a character certificate as to what type of a person I am. So what we will think? Sawab nukam. That this is going to get sawab for this. The poor man didn't have a job. And now he's going for a job interview. Let me write something for him. So in there now we start writing. We state, his character is so good. He's such an honest person. He's such a hard working person. He's such a reliable person. But we don't know the man. We only meet him in the masjid. So this is also considered as lies. That you have lied over here. It is mentioned on Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala on one occasion, one person, he spoke about another person in front of Umar radiallahu ta'ala. So Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala asked this person, he said, this man that you're speaking about, that do you really know this man? He asked him that, did you make safar, did you travel with this man? So he said, no, I didn't make safar with him. So he said, did you have any business transaction with this person? So he said, no, no business transaction. So Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala said, you don't know the man. When you travel with a person, then the colors of a person opens up. Now you see the temperament, the mizaj of that person, that where he loses his anger, when his work doesn't take place. Now you come to know the reality of a person, or the kindness of a person, that how he gives preference to somebody else when you are traveling with him. Or when you are in business with a person, then you come to know the reality of a person. When he gives his word, he keeps up to his word, doesn't keep up to his word. All these realities will open up in business and in traveling with a person. But you don't know this person. So when you don't know the person, Umar radiallahu ta'ala told him that rather you keep quiet. And if you are asked about that person, then mention this much that I know him. For example, I meet him in the masjid, and this much I know about the person. Or he is my neighbor and I greet him, they seem to be good people, up to this much I know about him. But over and above this, I do not know. So this very person, he's prepared to write down that this man is of sound moral and sound character. This is false evidence. On one occasion, Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was sitting with Sahaba. So he was reclining. And then he told Sahaba, Ala ukhbirukum bi akbaril kabair. Should I not inform you, O my Sahaba, what are the major sins? So Sahaba says, certainly, O Nabi of Allah. What is it? So Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam mentioned, Al ishraku billah. That a man, he ascribes partners unto Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. That is the greatest guna that a person can commit. And then Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, Wa uququl walidain. That to be disobedient to your parents, this is a major sin. And he was still reclining. Then Nabi alayhi salam sits up. Why? To show the importance of this matter. And he said, Allah wa shahadatu zur, wa shahadatu zur, wa shahadatu zur. Three times Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa mentioned this. That to give false evidence, this is also amongst the major sins that a person can commit. So you're writing such a certificate. This is also a major sin that a person is giving false evidence. And this Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala mentioned in the Quran Sharif as well. فَاجْتَنِبُوا الرِّبْسَ مِنَ الْأَوْثَانِ وَاجْتَنِبُوا قَوْلَ الزُّورِ. That abstain, stay away from the filth of idol worship and abstain from giving false evidence. That this false evidence, it has been equated to idol worship. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala save us. But here also again, there are certain occasions where it becomes permissible for a person to speak a lie also. For example, a person is mazloom, a person is oppressed. And now, when he is oppressed, there is a danger of him losing his life. So at that time, it becomes permissible for a person to speak a lie to save his life. But then also the ulama haven't given general concession that speak a lie. But what the ulama have mentioned, that at such an occasion, act and practice upon what is called tawriya or ta'reez. That where the speaker, he says something, and the opposite party, he understands something else. And in this way, try and get out of the situation. For example, Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala anhu, he had accompanied Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam on the occasion when Nabi alayhi salam made hijrat from Makkah Sharif to Madinah to Munawwara. Now that was such a time where the kuffar were in search of Nabi alayhi salam. And they offered 100 camels also, that if anyone can capture Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and bring Nabi alayhi salam to us, we will give 100 camels. So everyone was in search of Nabi alayhi salatu wa sallam. So when they were moving now, they had left the Ghar Thawr, the cave of Thawr, on the way to Madinah to Munawwara. One man met Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala. So he knew Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala. But he didn't know Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So he asked Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala, that who is this person that is with you? So had Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala said, this is Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, the life of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam is in danger. And if he said something else, then he would have been speaking a blatant lie. So what did Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala do? He acted on the sawriya, on the ta'reel, and he said, "Hadha ar-rajulu yahdini as-sabil." This is the man that shows me the path. And what he meant, that Nabi alayhi salam shows me the path to Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. He shows me the path to Jannah. And what that man understood, in those days they should travel in the jungle, in the desert. So they used to have a guide. The guide will take them, show them the direction to their destination. So when he said, "This is the man that shows me the path," he thought that this is a guide. He's showing him the path to his destination. So see, he didn't speak a lie here also, even though the life of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was in danger. Mawlana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi, rahmatullah alayh, when the British had come to India, so at that time, they had issued a warrant of arrest for Mawlana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi, rahmatullah alayh. And they had established the magistrate courts all over. So one day they caught hold of Mawlana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi, rahmatullah alayh, and they brought him into the magistrate court. So they asked him, they said that we have information that you have weapons by you, you have guns. And Mawlana did have at that time. So we have this information. So Mawlana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi, rahmatullah alayh, was a simple man who was reading his tasbih. So he said, "Ye mera hathiyar hai. This is the weapon that I have. Meaning, this is my weapon against shaitan. A man that turns away from the zikr of Allah Ta'ala, وَمَنْ يَعْشُ عَنْ ذِكْرِ الرَّحْمَنِ نُقَيِّدْ لَهُ شَيْطَانًا. Then we appoint a shaitan over him. So just then Allah Ta'ala has his awliya also. One man was passing by. So he said, "Ye to hamare mahalla ke muazzin hai. What you holding this man for?" So they let him go. So see, here also, he doesn't speak a lie. But he acted upon this, what is called tawriya, what is called ta'reez. So this is one occasion where a person can speak a lie. Another occasion where it is permissible for a person to lie, al-harbu khuda, that on the battlefield, this is deception, that army that is fighting against you. So it is permissible to deceive them, Darul Islam and Darul Kufr, Darul Harb, where the two countries are at war. So if a person, he deceives the kuffar, he brings away their wealth, their possession, or he gets so many of them massacred, so many of them killed. So on the occasion of war, that is permissible also, even if he speaks a lie. So that is the second occasion. The third occasion where it is permissible to speak a lie, the hadith says, "Laysa al-kazzab alladhi yuslihu bayna an-nas fayanmi khayra aw yaqulu khayra." One riwayat comes, "Fayukhbiru khayra aw yaqulu khayra." That person won't be considered as a liar. That person that makes peace between two people. You know, two people are not speaking. They don't see eye to eye. But one person, he's involved in social work. So what you do, you go to the other party. You go to him. And you tell him, "You know what, the other person speaks so much about your social work. You're doing so much fantastic welfare work you are doing. You help so many people. He speaks so good about you." And the other party, maybe he's a very generous person. So now you go to him and you think, "That man speaks about your charity all the time. What a generous person. What a kind person you are." So what happens now? You create love in their heart. And in this way, you unite the two people. So this person also is not considered as a liar. And the fourth occasion where it is permissible, كِذْبُ الرَّجُلِ عَلَىٰ إِمْرَأَتِهِ لِيُرْضِيَهَا. That a man, he speaks a lie to his wife to make her happy. The food wasn't up to your standard, but you told her that today was the best food I ever ate in my life. Never did I eat such food. So she became happy. So here also it becomes permissible. This person won't be regarded as sinful for speaking a lie. So this is the fourth advice that we have discussed, where a person should try and protect the son. Allah Ta'ala give me tawfiq and all of us tawfiq.